Yeah, I tested it. This is Luva Waterman on May 11th, 1989. Luva, you said you were born in Delta, Ohio, because your Roland family farms were there as well as in this territory. You went from Ohio to where?
We moved from Delta, Ohio to West Branch, Michigan. My father wanted to take advantage of the opportunities he thought was there, and he worked on the good roads there, and he was a well driller there. And then later, when my grandparents left their home to move to Detroit, we moved on their farm, which was 7 miles from West Branch, and lived in the log cabin. It had a barn. Oh, one thing I didn't tell you, Mernie, it had a corn crib, and we made a playhouse out of that. We put slats across, you know, and we had our toys out there and all. And one morning my mother went out to pick raspberries, and this bear loomed up in front of her, and she motioned for us to go to the house. And that alerted her. Then she went looking at our playhouse, and the bears had been circling the playhouse. I suppose we left food or something there. So I lost my place, didn't I?
No. Now, while you lived there, your mother didn't want you to go to school.
Yes, because of not only the wild animals, the bears and other wild animals, I had to go through the woods a distance about 2 miles to the school. And she thought she didn't want to send a young girl, a six-year-old girl, through the woods to buck wild animals. Besides, there were some ruffians in the neighborhood, and she thought between the rough boys and the wild animals, she better keep me at home. So I didn't go to school until my younger brother was old enough. He was 5 and I was 7 when we went to school. And then
shortly after that, then, you moved down this way?
Then later, when I was 8 years old, we moved to Northwest Territorial Road at Gottschalk Road to my father's farm, to my grandfather Roland's farm. And there we had a dairy cattle and pigs up on the hill across the road, and farming went pretty well, but not enough income. So my father then decided that he'd give up on the farm again and move to Plymouth. And when we moved to Plymouth, the place we finally lived the longest time was on Mill Street, and that was our third move in Plymouth. First, my father worked at the hardware, Connor's Hardware on the corner. It still has the name on the building, you know, Connor's. It's been a ladies' dress shop now. But the pay isn't very good for clerking in hardware, not for a large family like ours. So he went to work on the railroad. He worked long hours, and he liked his work, and the pay was good. But eventually, he thought he'd accumulated enough that he wanted to settle into his own place. And that's when we moved to Waterford and lived in the house that Charles and Barbara George now live in. And it was, in many ways, it was depressing. In Plymouth on Mill Street, we'd had electricity, plumbing, a heating system, a basement, and plenty of room. When we moved to this little house, there was no water, no heating system, no plumbing. The only thing we had was electricity. And we had to carry water for eating, drinking, and laundry from the spring that was down the hill from the home near the railroad. And of course, the other neighbors were carrying their water from the same spring because they didn't have any more conveniences than we had. So the spring would go dry and then we'd have to stop in what we were doing. Our plumbing were these outdoor two-seaters, and ours was back of the house near the line fence, and of course treated with chemical. Of course, we had a coal-burning stove in the living room. We had an oil stove in the kitchen. My sister and I did the laundry, which were huge piles of laundry, on the weekend on the washboard with a wash tub. We had to carry the water from the spring, heat it on this oil stove, which took a long time, and then keep adding it to the suds, and of course trying to get enough water ahead to rinse the clothes. What helped was drying them on the line outdoors. Yeah. They smelled pretty good then. And
now you were high school age then.
Yes, I was a 10th grader.
Where did you go to school? Was there a high school here? In North?
No, only a little country school here in Waterford. So I had been attending Plymouth School, and I continued until I graduated from Plymouth School. Then I matriculated at Eastern College and got earned enough credits through the summer to teach in the country school that I had attended on Northwest Territorial Road in Packard's Corner. By then I was 18 when I went there to teach. And I remember Calvin Hearn, who was 16, had been my classmate when I went to that school earlier before moving to Plymouth. So we managed to graduate him from the school.
You taught the boy 2 years younger than you. And then you met your husband then? You taught there for 2 years?
I really met the neighbors before I graduated because Dorothy Waterman, who's the sister of my husband Claude Waterman, was in the same classes at school, and we, of course, carried lunches. Joe and I walked the railroad track from, you know, down here, this railroad track. We didn't have money for the streetcar that ran along, and we didn't have conveyances, so we'd start early in the morning and hoof it to school, and then we'd come back and carry our lunch. And I think I think the other kids were driven in. Todd would drive his sisters in, or he picked us up. That was a help. And he always had chocolate-covered peanuts in his pocket, and we were always hungry when we got out of school. But anyway,
where did I go from? See. Okay. Then, now you taught at
Cooper's Corners
for 3 years.
No, for only one.
Oh, 1 year.
Only 1 year, and there weren't enough pupils, and the school was closed, and so the children then went into Plymouth School. Then I went to Newburgh School and taught there 3 years.
And that was at Ann Arbor Trail on Newburgh Road.
That's right. And then I went on to another country school, but when I left the Wayne County schools, I was teaching at Patchen School on Warren in Newburgh. So,
Then you left teaching for a while, right?
Yes. And I had started my family, so I left teaching and stayed home for until my girls were in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And then I returned to... well, you see, this teaching at Patchen School, Newburgh was the one before the family.
Mm-hmm.
And then I returned to the Wayne County Schools. That's when I taught at Patchen.
Oh, okay.
And when retired from Patchen in...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We probably don't have to do some rearranging.
Yeah. And then in 1954, you decided to apply.
I decided to leave the country schools and go full time for 1 year to Eastern Michigan to get my degree, so that I would have a permanent certificate. I wanted to qualify for a permanent certificate in teaching. So I spent a year at Eastern earning the degree in 1954,
mm-hmm.
and continued until carrying courses until I also got the master's degree.
From Eastern also?
Yes, they had a graduate school by then. They had enlarged their faculty and their staff. And there was one teacher I liked very much who helped us specialize in reading. You know, and that's where I thought we needed help. Still do, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, then when you went to Northville, did you go as a regular classroom teacher then?
Well, we worked it out when I interviewed, when Mr. Ammerman interviewed me to hire me. And he said, well, it surely looked. He said that I'd had a good recommendation from my teacher instructor at Eastern for this special reading program, and he didn't doubt but what I was well qualified. However, a weak place was in primary teaching, so he requested that I take a second grade classroom and get the primary experience, because it was anticipated that the reading help would have to be from beginners through the 12th grade. So,
he had you teach
second grade for?
Well, I was trying to teach it for 2 years. Didn't I teach 1 year at Ammerman School? Oh, the second graders are wonderful. They're so loving and so, they're precious.
Yeah.
But, and then I transferred to Ammerman School and had a second grade there for 6 months. And you remember, well, maybe you don't, I was changed from teaching at second grade level to the reading program then. And let's see if I can think of the one that was hired to take my place. I guess not. But anyway, another teacher took the second semester.
Yeah. Now, you started at a second grade at Ammerman, and then did you go to Main Street, was it, for second grade, where you were pulled into reading from there?
The first year at second grade level was at Main Street School.
Oh, Main Street. Mm-hmm.
And I had a downstairs room that emptied out the back door onto the playground.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ann Chismar was down there too, because of course I can't be sure. There was a teach region. We sometimes see each other when there was art class or playground duty. But anyway, the first year of primary teaching was at Main Street School.
Mm-hmm.
And the second...
Who was principal then? Harry Smith or Mr. Ellison?
I thought it was Mr. Pregitzer, whom I had known in, no. Yeah, I think Mr. Pregitzer was there. And then shortly after, Harry Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only two I remember at that school, for principals at that school.
Yeah.
And then Dick Kay at Ammerman.
Oh, yes. Those were good days, too.
And that's when... you know, who was the secretary there.
Winnie Proctor?
When he moved, when he changed schools, when he left, it was Winnie.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the line it was, oh, I guess she was only at high school, wasn't she? Didn't she retire the same year you did?
Marion Zadie?
Marion Zadie.
Yes, so she was at Ammerman part of the time. I didn't know when.
I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
Well, she was, I remember, because I remember coming to Hall, and when she was animated, you could hear her, you know, all the way down the hall. So I remember Marion Zadie.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Maine, at Moraine was Evelyn Boonholm,
a great girl.
Yeah. And her son brought the gravel from my driveway.
Oh my!
And I had young Zuner, you know, I had had gotten well acquainted with him, so we had kind of a reunion when he was delivering. Oh, they had this great big heavy truck, you know, and hooked into a limb of a tree. Such a little fellow to be handling such a big, that's another
story. Well, and
story.
He was the boy who was in a wheelchair at school for a couple of years.
I've forgotten.
Yeah,
that's right.
So he's all strong and better, huh?
Yeah, has his own place, and had a good talk with Evelyn.
Oh, she's a great girl.
Mm-hmm.
On the teaching, on that specializing in reading, that was kind of an unusual addition to a school program. And were you the first one to be the reading specialist?
As far as I know.
Yes, I think so.
And
how did you set it up? Do you remember? You know, were you, you scheduled the kids in and, you know?
Yes, I would say see children for individual help for a period of a half hour, three times a week. And then when they got seven teachers and
15 children, they didn't, I thought they'd take them, give them more time, more attention, the same schedule.
Yeah. Half an hour, 3 times a week with the...
Yeah.
With the
and then the other 2 days, you'd work on new accepting new referrals, writing up records, assembling materials, you know, every other day.
Well, and you also supported a lot of other programs in the school. You know, it wasn't that you attended just yours, if there was
something. Well, the last, the year I retired, I was assigned as a VT to get referrals about, not of reading, of other kinds, with the instruction to help the people who were taking over the reading program. Mm-hmm. Now, was it 5 or 7 that we had the year I retired?
That many schools?
Yeah.
Well, I think it could have been 7 because...
I thought it was
the
7. I've been,
yeah.
I know when I've talked with my family, I said, well, there were 7 who took over the work.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to go from one little box of materials to these material centers.
Yeah.
And your work setting up the library was really a material center, wasn't it? You started accumulating more and more material.
Yeah.
How many libraries did you work in?
The most I worked in was 4.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking of things, too, that you did, like they would have you introduce the rest of us to new materials or to new equipment. I know one time you had in the recreation building, what's now the recreation building, it was then part of the school building center, you had some kind of, you had equipment that you were showing us how to use, and reading materials and things like that.
I don't remember, Marnie.
Mm-hmm. But always there was the feeling that you were supporting the rest of us, you know.
That was the instruction. Mm-hmm. That was Mr. what Mr. Hammond wanted me to do, to lend support everywhere I could.
Yeah.
In some cases it's easy to do, in others it's not so easy.
Yeah.
Now you know they're thinking, they're trying to go back. I have seen some workshops on TV. They're trying to go back to the way we did it in country school, have all the levels right there within.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's wrong to move children out of the regular classroom. Well, I don't know, Marie, some of these children, they couldn't focus, you couldn't get their attention, you knew that they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I wonder, is there anything new under the sun? We do it this way and then we change, and then we go back to do it the same old way. And is there anything new under the sun?
Once I
you can. Have to...
Yeah.
Get this out where it doesn't fit.
I complained to you once about the fads in education. And you said, don't feel that way about it. It means that we have all those different ways of reaching the kid who can't be reached by one way. We have some others to try.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like there's a real variety. Anyways. Lou, I see that you were listed as a moderator at the Waterford One Room Schoolhouse in 1926 and 27. You were very young. That school building was up near the present Meads Mill. It was the one.
Yes, would be over the fence this way. It was closer to the neighborhood then.
Uh-huh.
At what is that street at the back? Ours was Meads, and what was the one to the back? But anyway, it was on that street. And it was a one-room school.
Mm-hmm.
The water had to be carried in, you know, from one of these, you get a big bottle of water and they turn the water cooler,
drinking water.
Huh? It, to get, because, you see, they didn't have water then.
Mm-hmm.
And the lavatories were the chemical kind.
Were they outside?
Inside, like closets, water closets. But no water for flushing, so you use chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put that in. And of course it had a stove, a furnace, but it was pretty like pioneer living.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the 1950s, a lot of these one-room schoolhouses were wiped out in this consolidation effort. And I think your point about taxes, why would the citizenry give up their one-room schoolhouse? Maybe that's it.
I know firsthand. I was on the board. We dealt with it. We had to get this community ready to understand it and to cooperate. But you see, just the same as Plymouth consolidated and reached out to get theirs, to get a good, better tax base and a better income.
Mm-hmm.
Other communities, not just Northville and Plymouth, but all communities, were doing the same thing. They were bringing their rural schools in. And like what I explained that happened at Cooper's Corners was more or less happening other places, but sometimes in reverse, you had too many children in the school for one teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jesse Wilson had too many. And Iva Meinhardt was one of our teachers. And Ada Watson was one of our teachers. Well, some of them, you know, had just a normal load for a teacher, but some of them were overloaded. And then they'd get all these other problems, the non-learner that you had to cope with in school, or the, what do I want to say, the handicapped child who was a source of distraction and entertainment to the other pupils, and who experienced some child abuse from inconsiderate children.
Yeah.
And you know, it gets to be overwhelming for one country school teacher to take care of an overload with that sort of thing.
Yeah. So then it seemed easier to send the kids, they bused them. They had to arrange the busing then.
That's about the time that busing came in, and that's one reason it was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, that's how I could return to teaching. I no longer escorted my children to school.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go walk with them in the mornings and watch them get to school. But the bus stopped at the foot of the hill, and you see all the children get on the bus and come off the bus. And of course, by the time they get to junior high, they need to practice some independence anyway.
Yeah.
Mama can't take them by the hand and lead them anymore.
Now, you spoke of this house here on Reservoir Road. You decided to live here. There was a building on this property?
No.
No?
Mother and Father Waterman had decided to share their property with their son. And this 50 by 150 foot lot was Claude's site.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we decided to build a house, but we didn't have the wherewithal to do it, and it was very difficult to get materials because the war effort was on then. So we started with a lot of secondhand lumber that we could find, whatever we could find available. And we positioned this house where it now stands, thinking that we'd live in it temporarily and then it would be the garage. But we soon realized that it was in such a poor position that if we built the house in front of it, we'd be out in the road almost. So that's when we decided to make this the house and worry about the garage later on. So this very small, tiny cottage with a bedroom, a living room, and a kitchen was jacked up, and we excavated under the house and put in the basement, and then we let the house down on the basement. What an ugly time that was.
To live in
that was as far as we could go. Mm-hmm. We now had the basement, which was covered over, that lent, and we needed more, we desperately needed more room. So I took the cooking and eating down into the basement. And of course we did have a furnace then. Jesse Wilson's husband sold us our furnace. He was an engineer. She was our teacher. And they lived the other side of Austin Louise.
Oh, on the, still on
they
the
lived in Plymouth for a while, but mm-hmm. then they came over here on the hill. Well, then, so we lived in that ugly condition with half a house over a full basement. Then eventually we built out over it, making the living room larger like it is now, and adding the little bedroom where it is now. The bedroom there where my children were born is the same location it always was. What had been the kitchen prior to having a basement is now my bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we were reasonably comfortable, but when my mother died at age 53, she left my youngest sister, Ardith, and Murray behind. And as it worked out, I decided to take my youngest sister to live with me, so mm-hmm. then we did need the room up here. Mm-hmm. And she was 11 at the time and mm-hmm. had appendicitis and had a bad time at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So she was practically an invalid for oh manner months. That's when she came to live with me. But and this part was built on let's see, Claudine's been about 42 years ago. But it was built on, you know, is more living space.
Yes, it's lovely.
And then it
all
was
the
turned
windows.
Into the kitchen. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's mm-hmm. Original.
Mm-hmm.
Then, but to get more space, is this thing on?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had, I told you we had no plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when you see, the Plymouth water supply was coming from the springs from Beck Road.
Mm-hmm.
and was pumped into this reservoir here.
Oh.
And then that water was shuttled through to Plymouth in the water tower in Plymouth and was for Plymouth use. Little by little, other people got to tap on to that, and that goes across. They had water rights from John Waterman, Father Waterman,
uh-huh.
and it goes diagonally across my property like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I first, finally, I can't tell you all quickly, but finally I was able to tap in, and my water, now it comes in here, and the tap is up there on the reservoir.
Uh-huh.
This tap wasn't there then. That tap got put on when some of these other houses were built, and some of them down farther. But anyway, now it's no longer the water from the spring. The reservoir is not used at all. It's dry and empty, and the children, there's another story. I mustn't get into that. Call me sometime, I'll tell you. But anyway, that's how we got the water.
Oh.
And my father had after he moved here, went back into well drilling. He tried to drill a well for me, mm-hmm. and he got partway down. And Harvey Whipple across the way got anxious for his well. So he insisted that my father do his well. So my father left my well without finishing it, went over to drill for Harvey Whipple. Now if we drill a shallow well, it would go dry. It never mm-hmm. would be adequate. That was the trouble with all the wells, whether they were shallow and hand-drilled or what.
Yeah.
My father went more than 200 feet drilling for Harvey Whipple. And it's sad to tell you, it wasn't fit for drinking, it wasn't fit for watering his iris gardens, it wasn't fit to use. He'd gone into the salt mines that lie down under, you know.
For him?
And it was briny salt. So he never came back and finished my well. He says, if I leave you with a shallow well, you have not enough water to get along with. If I drill you a deep well, I'll get into the same layers. And you know the salt mine runs under Detroit.
Yes.
It's been not in use now. They used mm-hmm. to do, the salt that we put on our highways in the wintertime used mm-hmm. to come from the salt mines there. But now we have a different preparation for the roads, and you noticed how nice my road is. It's almost like a paved road. It's better. And then besides, it doesn't rust out the cars.
Yeah. So you had, before you tapped into the reservoir, where did you get water for this house?
I carried it back to carrying water. I carried it from Mother Waterman. She had a shallow well.
Where did they live, on Reservoir Road here?
The other side of Eunice, Keith Steinwell bought it from the Waterman brothers after Mother and Father Waterman, after Mother was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he redid it. It used to be a log house, and then it was a stucco house. You remember when the stucco houses came in style? And Keith has done everything to change it the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, they had a shallow well, but it would go dry, so that it hardly took care of drinking and cooking, especially when we added another household to that mm-hmm. supply. And but they had a cistern, a good-sized cistern, and the rainwater back then was clean and usable. So I would carry as much as I could. I would carry water from the ditch across the way to wash my baby clothes, you know, that you have to keep that up. But other times I would carry up here. But bless Mother Waterman, she decided that the way to do it was go down to her basement and use her washing machine and her laundry tubs right where the water was.
Sure.
And not because they
they
somehow had the water. They must have had a hot water tank. They had a furnace and a basement. So anyway, she shared with me.
Oh.
And until we could hook in and get the water.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you right when that was. You know, they used to come up and measure the reservoir every day, and Mr. Redmond did that, and Hazel Redmond taught with me at Newburgh School back when, and she's gone now. She married Henry Grimm, and Floyd married Elsie Crowder, and Elsie and Irene Crowder, Elsie's sister, married my brother Joe. So, that's when you live 60-some years in the same community, you know.
A lot of
intermarrying.
Yeah. Does Joe Roland, your brother, live around here then?
Joe Roland passed away. It's about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was so angry.
Oh,
I was so angry, I couldn't hardly contain myself.
Mm-hmm.
How dare he? It wasn't his turn. I'm the older one. Didn't he know we were taught to take turns?
Yes.
And, but you see, there, as long as I could remember, there'd always been a Joe.
Yeah.
And as long as I could remember, Joe and I started to school together, Joe and I.
Yeah.
Talk together.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've since lost a sister and also her husband.
Oh.
I didn't get so angry. I don't know why.
Yes.
You want me to say it over again?
Yeah. Now the property, you were married and you came and you lived in the Waterman house here at the corner of Reservoir Road. But this property, the Waterman property, was where?
It had already been traded or changed by then. When these the Marshalls, the Pattersons, the Whipples, and I'm leaving out one, who's the Clarks, came out, they wanted the land on that side.
Mm-hmm.
So they worked out a trade. They'd trade this, and of course the Watermans wanted to do market gardening, so this lent itself more to market gardening than down the hill and through the river. Yeah, the river used to come closer too, you know, but that was shut off when they made it into a park.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's what they wanted.
They were for
resort living. They were city people coming out to have their summer cottages in their summertime homes here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they traded. But when they traded, to make it fair,
mm-hmm.
they reserved 33 feet that came up here against the other farm. I'll tell you the name of that. But anyway, they reserved 33 feet because for a lane. And then they had some more acreage back there, and they were going to have chicken houses, raise chickens and sell eggs and sell chickens.
Oh, the summer people were?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, or so they thought.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they never did.
Mm-hmm.
So Harvey Whipple came over and he said, Luby, you just make me sick. You spoil my day every day of the week. And what's the matter, Mr. Whipple? What's the matter? Well, he said, you got that thing up there, and when I survey the landscape, that's all I can see. And that was my, no plumbing. That was my two-seater.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, I'll tell you, Mr. Whipple, I've got just 50 by 150 feet, and there's no place I know that I can fit that in. I'm not going to have it at my back door.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it as far away as I can. It probably was more like where the garage is, you know, because there was no garage there.
Yeah.
And I said, well,
You and I can fix it.
See, he says, what's the math? What's your idea?
Yeah.
Well, I said, you've got 33 feet here.
That adjoins you.
And I'm never going to make a home out of this 50 by 150. So if you will sell me the 33 feet. Well, he says, I'm not going to sell you part of it. I said, I want all of it. I want all of it. So I got the 33 feet, and it goes way back. And for something like $200 or $300, it was a bargain. And he got me a nice deed and, what do you call it, a certified contract. No, that isn't. You know, when you don't get a clear title to the land, you get a guarantee title. That's it. Oh. Guaranteed title.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Well, then it got to be a little bit short back here, you know.
Yeah.
Claude fixed me a line that you could reel out from a close, and I could stand here. That was the back door then. I could stand there and reel out my clothes to flip in the wind.
Yeah.
But we were still kind of hampered. So finally, mother and father Waterman, you know, became elderly and unable to use their land.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I said, well, now that I have the lane, it would be nice if my property went way back as far as the lane.
Yeah.
And I'd gladly pay you whatever you want. We could work it out. So then, they would sell it. They would do that. And they, Austin Louise got theirs. I don't know what their deal was. I didn't enter into that. But anyway,
you got, then your property
went all
the way back. With
then I had 150 feet plus 33 feet all the way back, you know.
Great.
And then pretty soon there was only the lot after Eunice, Claude and I gave Uni and Bill theirs. But anyway, before we could do that, we had to buy the frontage here, you know, and back. So again, I talked to the folks, and they had need for the money. They were thinking more of when their time would come than they were market gardening, because they were beyond that. So I paid them what they wanted. Well, everybody, the kids and everybody in the family were in favor until about 10 years later, and then they started saying I didn't pay them enough. Well, I paid them what it was worth then, but the inflation came on, you know. So anyway, I still have an acre and a half that I own.
Lovely.
And I have given Eunice and Bill, Claude and I gave them the land between because they had wanted it, but they couldn't take it when at the time of the house. So we just gave it to them later. And so they have an acre, and I have an acre and a half, which is 2.5 acres. But Keith got the house site. And he's done wonders with that.
Well, then this is a Ramsdale farm that's your neighbor over the hill.
It used to be Ramsdale's farm.
Ramsdale.
And I think I think Harris's and all of those back there were part of it. I'm not sure about that.
So this was kind of a summer resort when the people were buying land.